You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
David Boies and Ted Olson were the opposing attorneys in one of the most controversial Supreme Court decisions in recent memory, Bush versus Gore. But now they've joined forces for an unlikely but also quite controversial cause, same-sex marriage. They've put California's Proposition 8 on trial in federal court in the case Perry versus Schwarzenegger. And closing arguments are yet to be made, but however the case is decided, most believe it's on the way to the Supreme Court. Mr. Boies is chairman of Boies, Schiller & Flexner, and Mr. Olson is a partner in Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher, and I'm very pleased to welcome them to our show today. I'll have to assume that on most issues, the two of you still find yourselves on opposite sides of the ideological spectrum. How did the divisive issue of same-sex marriage bring the two of you together?
Well, let me start off with that, and I think David will amplify on it. I was contacted about the possibility of representing the parties that might want to bring a challenge to Proposition 8, and after some discussion, I decided that this was the right thing to do, that I wanted to be involved, and I thought that we could mount a successful challenge to Proposition 8. But I also felt that I'm well known as a conservative, a member of the vast right wing, so to speak, but some people think. And I did not want...
Which is usually opposed to same-sex.
Pardon me?
Which is pretty much 100% opposed to same-sex marriage.
Well, not 100%. And there are a lot of conservatives and libertarians who feel that the government should not be involved in preventing people from getting married under these circumstances. But I did not want our case to be perceived as a political thing. I didn't want it to be seen through the prism of Ted Olson. I didn't want to be the focus of attention, and I suggested to the people that I was working with that we ought to get a prominent lawyer who's an extremely good lawyer to be a teammate and a partner with me, and we wanted someone on the other side of the political spectrum. I've known David a long time. We were on the opposite sides of that famous case. But I have the greatest respect for David Boies. He's a fantastic lawyer. And as soon as I suggested David Boies, everyone said, that is a stroke of genius. That would be perfect.
Well, what happened when they called you, David?
Well, I think it probably took me about 3 or 4 seconds to agree.
Less than that.
And less than that, I think probably that's right.
This is not a totally political thing because the president is also opposed to same-sex marriage.
Yes, I have.
And many Democrats.
I've said a number of times that I'm waiting for my Democratic president and some of my Democratic colleagues to catch up with my Republican co-counsel in terms of supporting true equality in terms of the opportunity to marry.
Well, there's been debate in the past over whether homosexual rights are a civil rights issue.
We think of it as a human rights issue, a matter of equality, decency, and fairness. And honoring and respecting our fellow man and our fellow women and wanting them to achieve the same degree of happiness and freedom and liberty in our society as the rest of us do.
Now, any number of states have had gay marriage bans on the books longer than California. Why did you choose to challenge Proposition 8 in court?
Well, I think there were several reasons. First, California was one of the few states that actually permitted gays and lesbians to marry, actually had marriage equality, and then took it away. Second, California has this peculiar classification system in which you have 18,000 gay and lesbian couples who were lawfully married before Proposition 8, and those marriages are still recognized by the state of California.
So the California Supreme Court upheld Proposition 8, but also allowed the gay marriages that had been performed before, which creates three classes of marriage in California, it's been pointed out. Heterosexuals who can get married, gays who were married in that brief window, and all the other gays who cannot get married.
Yes, and indeed maybe there's even a fourth class because California also recognizes the validity of gay marriages that were performed in other states where it was lawful prior to Proposition 8. And you've got this anomalous situation where two people are married right now because they got married before Proposition 8, but none of their friends can get married, and they couldn't get married if they got divorced. In fact, they couldn't even remarry each other.
So are you really challenging the California Supreme Court rulings on Proposition 8?
No, we're challenging Proposition 8, and I think the California State Supreme Court rulings help demonstrate why Proposition 8 is unconstitutional.
How does the Defense of Marriage Act affect your case?
Well, I don't think it affects our case. Our case may affect the Defense of Marriage Act and its constitutionality. That law, which is a federal law, is being challenged in court in other cases. Our case and those cases challenge the discrimination on the grounds that it denies individuals the due process of law protected by the Constitution and the equal protection that's required by the Constitution. So it depends upon which case goes further first. But one will affect the other.
Doesn't the court use fairly strict scrutiny when determining whether a law violates the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution and whether people fall into the category of a suspect class?
Yes. There are arguments because this sexual orientation is an issue. The categorization of persons or discrimination against persons based upon sexual orientation is not an issue that's been before the Supreme Court before. But discrimination on various grounds, including race and gender, have been subjected to very strict scrutiny, which means that the courts demand that government establish very good reasons for the discrimination.
But race and gender are immutable. When we're talking about sexual identification, there's a certain amount of fluidity, isn't there?
Well, there's a certain amount of fluidity with respect to race as well. I mean, you don't just have, as they say, black and white. You have all sorts of shades in between. So I think there's fluidity with respect to a number of those areas. But I don't think that's really the issue. I mean, the really issue in terms of a suspect class and whether you ought to have strict scrutiny is whether you have an identifiable class of people who have been subject to historical discrimination and who, because of their minority status, don't have the power to change that themselves. And all of that is true, and true to a very dramatic extent with respect to the gay and lesbian community.
So the court has to find that gays and lesbians as a group are politically powerless.
Not powerless. No, African Americans are not powerless. Women are not powerless. It doesn't have to say that you're powerless. What it has to say is that you're subject to discrimination, and because of your minority status, you simply are not able to correct that discrimination yourself. It doesn't mean that you've got zero political power.
The U.S. Supreme Court held in multiple rulings like Loving versus Virginia that marriage is a fundamental right. So how does that apply to this?
Well, we are saying that marriage is indeed a fundamental right. The Supreme Court, as you say, has said that a number of times. And the Supreme Court said that it is a matter of freedom of association, it is liberty, it is privacy, it is all of those things. It's a right that we have as individuals to marry someone of our choice and live in that kind of relationship. And we're saying that the right cannot be denied to heterosexual people, and for that same reason cannot be denied for people of the same sex.
Who's arguing the other side of the case in California? Is the Attorney General Jerry Brown, who just announced that he's going to run for governor again, defending Prop 8 in court?
No, the Attorney General is actually agreed that Proposition 8 is unconstitutional. The people who are actually defending Proposition 8 are the people who proposed Proposition 8. They are really the intervening defendants in this case. The governor, who is also a party, has taken no position one way or the other, which is interesting.
My guests are David Boies and Ted Olson, who are both arguing the side against Proposition 8 in the case Perry versus Schwarzenegger. In California, same-sex couples are allowed to enter into domestic partnerships. So how are they hurt by being denied the title of marriage by the state?
One of the things that we demonstrated during the presentation of evidence during this case is that marriage is a very important relationship. It's recognized by society. It is approved by individuals in our society. Domestic partnership sounds to most people like some sort of business arrangement. Our clients in California said no one runs out and has a reception because to announce their domestic partnership. No one proposes to another person and says, "Would you like to be my domestic partner?" It hurts to be able to be unable to say that I'm married to the person I love. The point of Proposition 8 says that only a relationship between a man and a woman will be recognized as marriage. That tells people that your relationship, if you are gay, will not be recognized in California in the same way, saying that you are a second-class citizen.
Last month, the Washington Post ABC poll found that two-thirds of Americans now say they favor allowing gay and lesbian couples to form civil unions that would give them many of the same legal rights as married couples. But that's much higher than the number that favors full gay marriage rights. Some might look at those numbers and argue that an incrementalist approach to gay rights is the best policy forward. I'm assuming the both of you disagree.
Well, we certainly do. Just keep in mind that you mentioned Loving against Virginia, where the Supreme Court held that Virginia's ban on interracial marriages was unconstitutional. At that point in time, 64% of the American people opposed interracial marriages. If you wait until the public always catches up with the enforcement of constitutional rights, you wouldn't have a constitution. The whole point of a constitution is to guarantee minority rights, even if a majority opposes them.
Although, aren't people assuming that since the trend, we're trending toward more acceptance of the idea of gay marriage, that maybe we could just wait a little bit? In California, most gay rights groups have decided to wait until 2012 to pursue overturning Prop 8 because there was a pretty narrow margin in that vote in the first place, and it could be argued that a victory with voters, as the demographics change and younger voters vote this way, that will carry a larger symbolic weight than any kind of court ruling.
That might happen, and it might not happen. And it might happen in Arkansas. It might not happen in Mississippi. These same arguments are the same arguments that Martin Luther King confronted. People said, "You're going too fast. Society's not ready. Take your time." And we spent a long, long time with discriminating against individuals in our country on the basis of their race. When your constitutional rights in this country are being denied, you bring them to court and ask that the court overturn that kind of discrimination.
Well, much of the leadership of the civil rights movement has opted for an incremental state-by-state approach that focuses either on winning rights in legislatures or through the ballot box. But neither of the recent cases have been particularly successful. High-profile gay marriage votes failed recently by fairly large margins in both New York and New Jersey in the legislatures, despite the fact that we had assurances from gay rights groups that New York was going to pass that law. It's kind of suggests that even in liberal states, there's still strong resistance.
And I think that underscores what Ted was saying, which is that if you try to wait until you can get legislative approval of constitutional rights, you may wait a long time. We would have waited a long time before state legislatures in the South adopted Brown against Board of Education.
On the other hand, yesterday, talking about the South, gay marriages became legal in Washington, D.C., making it the sixth place in the nation where such marriages can take place.
I think that's a great development. I live on the outskirts of Washington, D.C., and I have to tell you that the photographs in today's paper of the people who got married yesterday, the very first people that got married, the joy in their faces, that is the sort of picture that we want to see throughout the United States. More and more people, it is true, thank goodness, that more and more people are recognizing the damage that discrimination is doing and the vitality that we're withholding from people when we say that they can't live like the rest of our citizens. So it's great that that's happening in Washington, D.C., but it's a long ways to go for the rest of the country.
My guests are Ted Olson, a partner in Gibson, Dunn and Crutcher, and David Boies, chairman of Boies, Schiller and Flexner, who've joined forces to argue the case of Perry versus Schwarzenegger in opposition to California's Proposition 8. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Ted Olson and David Boies, who have usually been in opposition, but they have joined forces to argue the case of Perry versus Schwarzenegger in California courts, and we assume this is going to go to the Supreme Courts. In court papers filed last month, sponsors of Proposition 8 wrote, quote, "Californians voted for Proposition 8 because they thought it would strengthen the institution of marriage and because they thought it would benefit children. Proponents of banning gay marriage often cite protecting children or protecting families." When you hear those phrases like protect children, do you think that opponents of gay marriage are using code language there? Are they implying that gay people will be preying on children?
I think there's no doubt that that is true to some extent. Indeed, some of the advertisements that we introduced at trial demonstrated that that was exactly what the intended message was.
On the other hand, haven't your opponents also pointed out that President Obama opposes same-sex marriage for religious reasons, and that's evidence that support the traditional marriage is not based on bigotry?
Well, it's not necessarily based on bigotry. Certainly, neither Ted nor I would say that everybody who opposes same-sex marriage is bigoted. But the First Amendment guarantees Barack Obama and everyone else the right to believe as a matter of religious freedom that people should or should not be able to marry under various circumstances. However, the First Amendment also forbids states or the federal government from imposing those views on everybody else. So people are free to believe what they want as a matter of religious conscience. They're not free to impose those beliefs on other people.
And Barack Obama also has come out against Proposition 8. Despite his opposition to same-sex marriage, opponents of
although he did say with respect to Proposition 8, they thought it was ill-advised, and he really was very supportive of the effort to prevent that from being adopted. So I don't think that we ought to be too critical.
What about some of the other things that we hear? Opponents of gay marriage argue that legalization would open the door to marriages to animals, marriages between
family
members.
That's crazy. I mean,
the reductio ad absurdum?
It is certainly absurd and ridiculous. It has nothing to do with that. Everybody knows that. It is an attempt to distract people's attention from what's really at issue here.
It's also extraordinarily demeaning to say to gay and lesbian people that if we allow you to have a warm, serious, permanent relationship, a stable relationship that we call marriage, that's something like people getting married to animals. That is so demeaning and so represents such intolerance. It was so unfair. I think that it's important to focus on that. Those kind of arguments, the sky is going to fall, and it's going to fall in these terrible ways, just don't belong in this dialogue.
What about the sky falling in another way, Ted? Many conservatives have argued that court rulings in favor of gay marriage involve judges engaging in judicial activism.
Well, as we've talked about earlier in our discussion, the Supreme Court of the United States has said again and again and again that marriage between two individuals is a fundamental right in this country. That, in fact, the Supreme Court said it is the most fundamental relationship that's recognized by the Constitution and various different parts of the Constitution. We're simply saying you can't withhold that fundamental right from two people simply because they're the same sex. You have to justify that, and California cannot justify that.
And remember, this is not a situation in which anybody's asking the court to create a new constitutional right. Everybody has recognized for decades that there was a fundamental constitutional right to marry the person that you choose. We're simply saying that you cannot discriminate in who gets to have access to that right.
Ted, didn't you write a legal opinion as a member of the Reagan Justice Department arguing that an openly gay prosecutor can't be denied a promotion simply because he's gay? What was the reaction of other people in the Justice Department at the time?
People accepted it. This was in the 80s. It was in the early years of the Reagan administration. My job as Assistant Attorney General for the Office of Legal Counsel was to render legal opinions about what was permissible or not under federal law outside the government. And I was asked whether an openly gay assistant United States attorney could be denied a promotion because he was openly gay. I looked at the laws and I wrote the opinion. I had forgotten all about it. Someone had brought it it to my attention. I'm very proud that I wrote that opinion because I said...
At least you're consistent.
That's nice, too, but it's, to be consistent on the right side is important. What I said was, if that assistant United States attorney is doing his job and he's not violating the law, you cannot, because of his sexual orientation, you can't put him in a separate category and deny him the rights of the federal government.
Now, up until now, haven't pretty much all of the gay marriage cases been on the state level? Is this the first time that gay marriage has gone on trial in a federal court?
Yes, it is. And the challenges have been based upon state constitutional grounds up to this point. And what California ruled, the challenge that preceded the one that we're bringing, only challenged Proposition 8 under the California Constitution. The argument was that it was an improper amendment to the California Constitution. Well, that is not the issue in this case. This is the case that says under the 14th Amendment that protects the right to due process and the right to equal protection, the protection of equal laws to all citizens, Proposition 8 violates that those provisions.
If this does go to the U.S. Supreme Court, and I'm assuming it will either way, what do you imagine? Will it really come down to convincing Justice Anthony Kennedy to vote the way you want him to?
Well, I'm sure David will add to this, but we are not assuming that we will prevail with any particular justice, and we're not writing any particular justice off. Right. When we finish making these arguments, and when the trial court judge who's hearing this case makes the findings that he's going to be making based upon the expert evidence that we've provided, we believe that we can convince anyone that this is the right conclusion of this case.
Antonin Scalia, really?
Like I said,
he voted the other way in the recent case, Lawrence versus Texas.
Well, he also said as a dissent, once we have gone this far, he didn't want to go that far, but he said once we have gone that far, which recognized the constitutional right of individuals to engage in private sexual conduct of people of the same sex, he said once we've gone this far, what basis do we have to deny the right to people of the same sex to get married? And we've cited that in our opinion. Now, he may or may not agree. We're not taking anything for granted.
But you're hoping for a unanimous decision.
We're going to try for a unanimous decision. And with David and I working on the same side,
right.
If you look back to Bush versus Gore, he got a few of the votes. I got a few of the votes. Now that the two of us are together, we'll get them all.
My guests are Ted Olson, a partner in Gibson, Dunn and Crutcher, and David Boies, chairman of Boies, Schiller and Flexner. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. The Supreme Court has involved itself in the gay marriage debate recently. First, the High Court ruled that the Proposition 8 trial shouldn't be televised, saying in an opinion that split along ideological lines that the supporters of Prop 8 have demonstrated the threat of harm they face if the trial is broadcast. Did that ruling by the Supreme Court give either of you pause?
Not with respect to the merits of the underlying challenge to Proposition 8. I personally am in favor of expanding cameras in the courtroom, particularly in cases where it's not a jury trial. The cameras were very unobtrusive. They could have been broadcast, and so people could have seen actually what was happening. So that was a case where I would disagree with the majority, but I don't think that has anything to do with the merits. The majority justices have a particular view with respect to cameras in the courtroom. And that is a view, I think, that they would have held, whether this was a marriage case or whether it was a criminal case or it was a political case. They simply don't believe that cameras in the courtroom are desirable.
But they said they talked about the threat of harm that supporters of Prop 8 face if the trial is broadcast.
But
they seem to be concerned about the safety of people who have proposed Proposition 8.
But that goes to why they don't like cameras in the courtroom. In other words,
they didn't say opponents of Proposition 8.
No, but it was the...
Because the opponents of Proposition 8 were not objecting. Mm-hmm. We wanted the cameras in the courtroom. This was a very scholarly trial. It was experts from Oxford and from Harvard and from UCLA and from Stanford talking about the issues that are very important to our society. The opponents complained about harassment and threats, but the witnesses that they had listed were all professional witnesses. They were people that were going to be paid to testify. They were law professors and so forth, and they pulled them off the case, I think, not because they were afraid that they were going to be threatened. I think they were afraid to be cross-examined by David Boies.
Last fall, the Supreme Court issued a stay barring Washington state officials from releasing the names of those who had signed petitions in opposition to Referendum 71, which gave benefits to same-sex couples. And the court will be hearing that case in April. With these decisions, doesn't the court seem to be hinting that it sees the privacy rights of anti-gay activists as trumping concerns that opposition to same-sex marriage is based on animus towards gays and to lesbians?
As you say, that case will be argued, I think, on April 28th, and we'll see what the court decides. The court is concerned, irrespective of the issue of gays and that the issue that's involved in our case, the court is concerned about some people wanting to participate in the political process anonymously. The Supreme Court held a number of years ago that people wanted to sign petitions to put something on the ballot in Ohio. They had a constitutional right to anonymity and not have their names revealed. There are a lot of issues in that. On the one hand, we want full disclosure and we want openness in elections. On the other hand, we want people to participate in the political process without fear of reprisal or that sort of thing. So the court will carefully balance those concerns.
And you must have been heartened by Chief Justice John Roberts' refusal to, on an application to the Supreme Court challenging Washington, D.C.'s new gay marriage law.
Yes. However, I must hasten to say that he was basically saying, we're going to defer to the District Court of the District of Columbia Court of Appeals because that was a matter of District of Columbia law. So on the one hand, it was good that he did defer. On the other hand, we can't read too much into that.
Well, let's say the Supreme Court makes a decision. Let's say it decides in your favor. Do you fear that a Supreme Court ruling could freeze the issue in time, meaning that we would wind up with two permanently polarized camps as we have with abortion?
No, I don't think so. If you look at what's happened with respect to racial rights and gender rights and other human rights, what you've seen is as society progresses forward, sometimes aided and sometimes led by the enforcement of constitutional rights, that it tends to bring society together, not polarize it. This is not the kind of abortion issue that has divided the country. This is much more in the area of human rights in terms of not discriminating against particular minorities.
No one thinks today that it would be okay to have a state law to prohibited interracial marriage. That was only 1967 that the Supreme Court made that decision. Now everyone accepts that that's, of course, that was right.
But gay marriage did have a major backlash. Gavin Newsom, who performed those ceremonies in 2004, set off a massive backlash, didn't he?
But there was a massive backlash to Brown against Board of Education. I mean, often when you've had the enforcement of constitutional rights that have laid dormant for a long time, there's a backlash, but that is not the question. The question is what's going to happen over time.
And I wouldn't call it a massive backlash anyway. Proposition 8 was 52-48. Right. And as you point out, the trend in America, especially among young people, if you ask young people almost anywhere in the country, they'll say, what is the issue? Of course people should be allowed to be married.
So you've argued the case. You've had the witnesses for Perry versus Schwarzenegger. When do you proceed to the next level?
The judge will invite us back either later this month in March or in April, I suspect, and we will have closing arguments. The judge will then render a decision, and then we will start the appellate process.
President Bush stood up in a State of the Union address and proposed a constitutional amendment about gay marriages. Do you think that whole thing is dead?
I hope it is. I was in the administration just short of that particular State of Union message. I was asked about it, and I said I think it was a very awful idea, and I would vote against it. And they didn't ask me anymore after that. But
they kind of knew where you stood. I want to thank the both of you so much for being on our show today. I've been talking with Ted Olson, partner in Gibson, Dunn and Crutcher, and David Boies, chairman of Boies, Schiller and Flexner, who have joined forces to argue the case of Perry versus Schwarzenegger against California's Proposition 8. Now in California courts, eventually we assume in the U.S. Supreme Court. And good luck, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Leonard.
Thank you.